So hello everyone, and welcome to our podcast for the course Sustainable Organizing in Times of Crisis. I am Kalle, and here
I am. I am Emilia.
And I am Sebastian.
And today we're interviewing Ruby van der Wecken, who is a member of the Global Justice Movement, who has had her spoon in many, many pots. And we are especially discussing grassroots innovations and degrowth in this podcast. Grassroots innovations are community-driven approaches to sustainability, while degrowth promotes transforming societies and economies to guarantee environmental justice, as well as a good life for everyone. So, without further ado, we'll get to our guest of honor, Ruby. Could you introduce yourself in a few sentences?
Sure, and thank you. Thank you for having me here. As you already mentioned, I consider myself a member of the Global Justice Movement. For me, that involvement started with going to the World Social Forum process. I don't know if you are familiar with this process. We are still having a social forum in Finland. But this was a worldwide process of civil society coming together. That was in 2001, coming together under a charge against neoliberalism and providing an open space for civil society actors to come together. And that had a very vibrant, first 10 years with forums spreading all over the world, thematic forums. And actually today, was it last week, there was a wonderful forum in Nepal, which was still gathering 30,000-40,000 people there from those corners, of course, predominantly. And so that has been a learning school for me. So learning from the Global South. At some point, I worked for close to 10 years for the Siemenpool Foundation, so Finnish Development Corporation, partners in the Global South, so learning there from their initiatives. And then on a local level here in Helsinki, I've been involved in the starting up and founding of development of Helsinki Time Bank. And then for the last years, my everyday has been at food cooperative Omama in Tuusula.
Excellent. How did you first hear about Omama? Like, how did you kind of get into that specific innovation project?
I think I first met with the farmer Jukka Lassila of our cooperative. It must have been in a session we were organizing around a solidarity economy. So that's another track here, which is that there grew an interest to be looking at economy from a grassroots perspective, which is what solidarity economy is providing. But we can perhaps still talk about that solidarity economy, and through that also the building and the furthering of our commons. And I think it was during a workshop that invited also Omama to take part, and met the farmer there. At some point also in our Helsinki Time Bank. A time bank is a place where people exchange services against time, if you like, and the basic principles that everybody's time, everybody's work, everybody's need is of equal worth. At some point, Omama also joined our time bank, so there was more cooperation. So that is how I learned of Omama. And then at some point 6 years ago, there came a moment that I thought, coming out of all the strands of all the things that I had doing, a bit of a now or never moment, and I made a jump to the farm at the time, thinking that perhaps we could be starting something like a school of commoning, which was a notion which was at the time coming up. And since then a lot of things have happened, and I've become also a very hands-on person who has learned to make falafel and who has learned to grow seedlings. But yes.
Nice. I had like a perfect question to fit here. What was it? Oh, yeah. So you mentioned the study in Aikakauppamukki. So the like, you had like a great, great English term for it as well. I don't know it as study in Aikakauppamukki. So all these projects kind of also like have interconnected like during your kind of career in grassroots innovations, haven't they?
Sure, in the sense that I see that kind of like a pathway in which one thing leads to another. I mean, totally not unlimited amount of things. So the Helsinki Time Bank, which you refer to, that came actually, that was something that started up spontaneously by, we were a group of friends, a group of new mothers, if you like, in the neighborhood. And that was a very spontaneous discussion about, it was one of the COPs, one of the climate conferences. I've forgotten which number, but in any case, what is the same is that it was basically as successful as they are, have kept on being since then. And so we were talking together about, of course, the frustration that is in the air about how there are not really room for good solutions, real solutions coming out of these efforts. And it led us to look at things in our neighborhood, and we started to think about it, that how would it be if we could be more freely perhaps borrowing things or even doing things for each other. And then somehow connected dots also to a workshop I had attended at the World Social Forum around the local currency in Mexico, the Tlaloc. And okay, longer story short, we came to hear of a Vaihtopiiri, an exchange rink operating in Helsinki already for many years. We got to talk to them. We Googled more. And we came to the notion of a time bank, which seemed to be so incredibly radical and beautiful. The fact that you say that everybody's time and work and needs are of equal worth, and that on the basis of that, you can be working together. That brought me then in touch also to people who were looking more at economy. And I told you about solidarity economy and the commons, and started to realize that with a currency like that, actually, you're making currency a commons. So instead of money being a commodity, which is producing a lot of inequality between us, we can also design money in a way that it is actually making for relationships between us, which is strengthening equality and inclusion. So the notion of the commons and currency as a commons came up. Different actors joined their time bank, like I told you about Omama, and started to realize like, hey, Omama, what we are doing there, community supported agriculture, that is about food as a commons. And I then had, it has been wonderful through the conversations with our farmer to understand that how important it is to work on our basic needs like food as a commons. So yeah, what I'm trying to say is that there is a connecting of dots here, basically, which leads you on to explore different things. But there are limits to that, because now I'm at a point that I feel that definitely should not be taking on anything more, because these strands are already so, already have had to let go of certain things. So I think that is a challenge for all of us, that how can we collectively keep up together the different things that we want to be strengthening and keep on with it and remain committed. And so, yeah, so I feel my basket has stopped. I'm not wanting to take on anything new. If there liberates time, it would be to strengthen any of these things that I have been working with, because they're all beautiful and worth it.
That's very good. We should, like, in this kind of hectic era of humanity, we also have to protect like our own time and our own kind of personal resources, because otherwise we'll get burned out. But now it's time for me to kind of pass the torch to one of my co-hosts. And yes, so Sebastian.
Thank you. So, in what ways has the Omama project fostered cultural shifts towards sustainable lifestyles and consumption patterns within the community it serves?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Omama is what you call a community-supported agriculture initiative. And the whole idea is there that you bring together producer members, so in this case, our farmers, the people that are working on a daily basis on the farm, together with what we don't want to call consumers, but members of our cooperative. And together you form a web of mutual support in which you are enjoying together both the abundance of what a harvest can bring, but you're also carrying together the risks. So that is already a fundamental way in which you're trying to break through the fact of seeing people as merely consumers, but actually seeing them as co-producers of their realities around them. And that is that paradigm shift to the commons. That's on one layer. And for Omama, it's fundamental that people come together to govern their basic needs in that way, because it's believed that you can be coming to systemic change through that. I mean, it's very normal nowadays to say that if we change our food systems, if we change our energy systems, if we change our mobility systems, so I mean the production, the consumption and distribution of those, everybody acknowledges today that those things are so pervasive in our society. Changing those, of course, we can be coming to real systemic change in society. But what is much less acknowledged and what's much less put at the core of this discussion is that those processes should be in people's hands. Because if we leave them to the market, if those processes are governed according to market principles, meaning that often that it is basically profit-making principles which rule the process, then we don't come to the social and ecological changes that we want to see. It is about getting things in people's hands again, governing more. It doesn't mean that it's without state. It doesn't mean that it is necessarily without market even. But people at the core, our values at the core, then we can be coming to systemic change, because change needs to be rooted in people's processes. So we need to have our governments accountable, but we also need to acknowledge that change is rooted in people's processes and the things that we're doing. And it's not only about the taking of shorter showers. It's also about taking control of our basic need systems. So that's one big thing here. Now, on another level, it's also about how we eat, to give you another level. At Omama, a basic principle, I mean, we could talk about permaculture, polyculture, but I mean, what is at the base of that is that first you take care of the land and then you see what you eat. And taking care means catering to its or seeing to its vitality, which means that you look at things as biodiversity. You look at carbon sequestration. You look at the efficiency of nutrient recycling. So a caring of the land. And it's fantastic when you talk with a farmer, not me, because I'm just learning about these things. But if you talk with our farmer, he can tell to you about like how he has looked at how things were 100 years ago on the land of the farm to understand what you need to grow today, where and what and when and how, to understand, I mean, to come to the land being well 100 years from now. That is the basis from which you determine what you eat today. So that means that as our cooperative, we make food bags around the year. We make food bags 50 weeks of the year. Every Tuesday and every Thursday, we have food bags going out. Those food bags are the same for everybody. So it cannot be that you say like, hey, I really like that rye bread, but I'm not so good with those runits, you know, or your barley or your oat grains, which are like substitutes for rice, right? I don't like that so much. Or I like the falafel, but I don't actually like your oat yogurt. The thing is that, of course, we have our preferences. Of course, we have different tastes. But the point is there's one food bag for all, because it's about learning of eating from an ecosystem. It's a very much a pedagogical process. That co-producing is a pedagogical process of coming to take responsibility together for our food system to the extent possible, but also simply the fact of our eating on a daily basis is a pedagogical process to learn how to use different things. And So we have in our food bag also ready-made products, and the idea is very much there to, on the one hand, to make things easier for people at home. For instance, this week I was making a casserole in which there was barley grains, and then there were peas, and actually there should have been seitan as well. But and then the instead of using an egg white milk substance to make the thickening of the casserole, right? Using the hemp milk. So that means that you take hemp milk seeds, and you have to, with water, you come to make them to a milk. You need to be sieving the calf of the seeds away. It's a time-consuming process. So those are things that we then do to make it easier for our members. But also, it's a learning process there to show, like, hey, this is what you can do with the things in your food bag. Again, they're a different kind of cultural change, if you like. And these are all long-term processes. And the whole issue, of course, of community building is another thing here, which has its own challenges and which is an own process. And also there are a lot of issues to learn together in terms of cultural change. So we are so much part of a society in which it's about you yourself, me and I, which is often, of course, also not at all a happy thing for people. But then how do we really come to also be together, work together, and discuss together? And that's a whole other area that I think we also have a lot more also to learn about. I'm a representative of Urgency, which is the community supported agriculture network in Europe, and I was just I'm a representative there in our solidarity economy network. And there we were in Budapest, and there was a little forum there. The main theme there was soft skills. So I think that is something which is coming up quite a lot now in, if you like, activist grassroots initiatives corners, which is that whole subject of, you already mentioned it, the issue about care, the issue about self-care, the issue about care for each other, and how we govern things collectively. So, yeah, those are some of the areas that cultural change is coming up in our COPE's work.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you mentioned some of the internal challenges, but how about what's the key challenges that you faced with OMAMA in relation to external actors and the dominant economic system, and how have you also addressed them?
Yep. So our main challenge is financial stability. We are our cooperative has two farms, and if you look at the land, our farmer always has put it like that we could be catering to some 200 households to come to a weekly food bag. 100 households with, so 100 food bags going out every week would kind of be making for a balance between income and costs. We are currently, which is quite normal for the month of, what are we? It's March today. We are at a 60 plus food bags. So as you see, we are under our zero level. Ironically, or not ironically, but when it was Corona year, we came to a magical 96 food bags going out every week. People were concerned. People were worried, at least for a moment. But I just make that joke, which is, of course, not a joke, but that as soon as the jabs came in, when the vaccinations came in, literally, it felt like there was again a coming down of people being on board. We were thinking that we had been winning this Corona thing, and perhaps people who weren't completely aware of why they joined the cooperative and what it actually was about, they perhaps fell back into other patterns, which is in a way logic, of course. But so it means that we yeah, financially things are not the way they should be. So this is posing really challenges for us. So it's about the amount of people that are with us, the amount of active members. This being said, there are of course structural problems towards that, and then we could talk about quite some things. I could maybe now also raise that another issue is here: how can we be that is relating to the whole area of farming in Finland, as also elsewhere in Europe. How can there be more producer members with us that somehow are in a position that we can be getting more people on board? So you see a bit the vicious circle here. If you cannot have enough people on board, you cannot have enough resources to be remunerating people. If you cannot have more people with, how can you be doing more and better so that you can have more people with, so both food and producer members. Next week, we are going to have a seminar around farm incubators, agroecological farm incubators for Finland. We've been for a couple of years, we have been part of an Erasmus Plus project in which we have been learning from experiences in France and in Spain about the issue of farm incubators. In very briefly, they are basically settings in which it is being guaranteed for newcomers into farming or people that want to change their careers, that for a number of years, 2 to 3 years at least, people can in safe condition practice farming. So it means that you guarantee a basic income, you guarantee access to land, access to tools, all those very tough things for people that are starting out in farming. Farming is very resource intensive. There are factors there that you cannot cover, like obviously things like weather, etc. Experience, gaining of experience and skills is super. People think that farming is just a matter of, farming is an accumulating of so much incredible deep knowledge. It is something that needs to be practiced with peace and not with constant worries of how you're financially. So in France and also elsewhere, they have been creating farm incubators, which are supported by, can be supported in society in different ways, but that they're giving those possibilities to people to, in all tranquility, practice farming and see how they want to come out with it. We also see that in Finland there's also the need for that. Finland has good schooling, Finland has different kind of funding mechanisms, but they are short, they're brief. Internships are short and brief. They are not providing a pathway that is actually, on the one hand, allowing for people to practice more sustainable farming before they go for a more deep dive on their own feet. And at the same time, initiatives like us, sustainable small-scale farming, for us it is very difficult to have people with us to learn and train for a longer time with us to create more stronger relations, and to then see that maybe that person will be staying on the farm after a period of incubation or then move on. So that is another system here, which is of course about the fact that policies are not geared towards the supporting of sustainable small-scale farming. Policies are geared towards large, they're geared towards monoculture in every way. Is it with regards to farming, or is it with regards to, for instance, producing in your kitchen? In our kitchen, we are trying to do a multitude of things. We are baking bread. We are frying. We are drying produce. We are wanting to press oil. Small, but wanting to have a multitude of also machines and infrastructure too. It's very difficult for small actors like that to have the latest machines of everything upkept. And again, where are policies that are acknowledging those problems and that would be supporting these kind of actors? It is more catered to the fact that you are doing one thing. You are needing one machine that is well equipped, and you could be getting support for the buying of that one new machine. But how about the getting of a host of different machines, which might all be secondhand? It's much more complicated to get those things in power. So yeah, those are a few of the challenges that you simply have to deal with.
So you mentioned also about the educational practices. So do you have at OMAMA had any strategic collaborations to scale up the impact into broader movements for social and economic transformation?
First of all, a little word of that, that if you talk about scaling up and doing things broader, what I'm seeing very much here that we're talking about our initiatives as being, I've mentioned the word commons, and commons not so much. It's not about a scaling up in terms of like the bigger, but more about how can we connecting our experiences. There's a wonderful scholar of the commons. She passed away a few years ago, but Silke Helfrich, she spoke of the commons as being crystals in a web, which can be connected together, and that through in that way to talk about the scaling up. But of course, I understand what you mean. We have quite a lot of cooperation on different levels. I already mentioned the Community Supported Agriculture Network on international level, Urgency. I mentioned the Solidarity Economy Network, RIPES. There are a host of international actors which bring different initiatives together or are wanting to support, with which we are working together and with which we also, of course, try to inspire through our experiences other actors elsewhere and be inspired by them, here in Finland. Then here in Finland, there is also cooperation between different community-supported agriculture initiatives. We have something called the Kumppanuus Maatalous ry. We have also in recent times, together with other comrades, there have been different events organized in which bringing different actors together. I think you could say at the moment the food movement is definitely alive and kicking. There's a lot going on. There are a lot of challenges. You only have to look at all the farmers on the street in Brussels at the moment. There are a lot of challenges also to how to facilitate us really talking to each other to understand the different positions. But there's quite a lot of networking and talking happening on at the moment. At OMAMA also, besides these actors, so both internationally and nationally, for instance, there's also been collaborating with some different universities. I think there's more and more interest also to come for so-called hands-on days to the farm, in which typically we will be telling about things. Typically we will be working together and then we will also be eating together. So those are nice days to also spend with students to get hand-on experiences. We have been working together also with different art projects. Also there again, issues of art and change, art and economy. The farm, of course, provides fantastic settings for people that want to give different forms to what they are engaging in. There has been work together with schools, which is, of course, a very, very good one. So different ages groups have been coming out to the farm for day camps and things like that. Different level students. We have also been, last year we hosted a Luonto Liitto, the Finnish Nature Association's camp on the farm. That was for them a first time to do that on a farm, which was also really good learning for everybody to understand what kind of ecosystems there can be on a farm and how nature conservation can actually be engaging with that. So yeah, there's a whole range of activity. Farms are fantastic. Farms are fantastic places to bring people together to learn about things, to open up discussion about a whole host of things. It's they're beautiful places.
Really interesting, and it seems like you really go the next step to educate people in what you are doing and what impacts you have. And from the impacts, do you measure them at the Omama community it serves. So do you have any metrics or indicators to have any assess, so you have any assess its effectiveness?
Yes. Well, there's not a huge scale. So, I mean, to look at that is there is no constant systematic approach to that. But of course, our food bag order levels are one thing here, and that we see as something. Yeah, it's already explained, as already explained, that has a lot to do with our capacity. We are making beautiful food bags. We are definitely, we can be proud of it that we are doing that 50 weeks of the year in Finland. That being said, our beautiful food bags can be even much more beautiful. We are very, very well aware to that. And that relates to capacity. That relates to that whole circle here. Of how many people are with, how many resources are there, how many more producer members can there be with us? At the moment, we are a too small team. So that reflects, of course, there's a reflection on that with the food bag orders, and they speak them for themselves. It's a two-way thing. It's both also an issue of how well are you able to translate what you're doing? The openness of people to engage with that. It feels there are a bit of waves in these things. There definitely is more interest today at large in society. But still it feels that we're a little bit, we're living a time in which there's so much more understanding of the importance of these initiatives. But it's not yet totally translating in the fact that really obviously more people would be joining us. There was this corona effect. It's still kind of showing that it's not yet. According to some, things just simply need to get even more harder for everybody close by to really make for more understanding about the importance of why it is important to join these initiatives. Perhaps it's also so that our capacity to also reach out to people is, of course, can be limited when you are struggling so much to basically do the daily processes. So in how far can we be reaching out and how far can we be marketing is, of course, another issue here. So in those kind of settings, talking about metrics and you're so aware of what are also your limitations that you know there's scope for improvement on all kind of fronts, but it's difficult also to talk about them when you know that your capacity to cater to any change is just not always so large. So
yeah, that's a good achievement to get 50 weeks in a year delivery on the bags.
Also, can I just say, why I was waiting for this specific or these few questions was because they are more on the economic side. And of course, our current, economic system kind of like that's how it's built. You have like metrics for everything. But what you brought up, because the first question was about kind of degrowth and scaling up, which is like an oxymoron in itself. And I love that what you brought up is kind of like, okay, but it's not about scaling up the production to make more money. It's about kind of like all the ways to do that, or like strategic collaborations are about like networks and just kind of like, reaching out, like, I don't know, the roots of a tree and kind of drawing people more to the actual message than it is to like kind of, about the monetary possibilities of the project. So
yeah, I mean there are the concrete financial needs like I put on the table. I mean, there are definitely those are very concrete. At the same time, there's a lot of else going on, and indeed it is about working together in scales that still make sense to us. If you want to talk like how big can things go, our farmer also put forward that, I mean, we know that, like, what is the amount of relations that we can really have, what is the amount of people that we can have really still substantial relations with? I think it's something like, is it like that with about the maximum 150 people, you can still somehow feel a bit of a connection in our co-op. We talked about the 200 households, right? There's something also, there's something about the scale in which that we together in such a group, we could be coming to meaningful relations with which we could be building up things together. And so you can be seeing that there could be different nodes of people working on that kind of a scale together, which could come to really real experiences of commoning in which we are really able to live up to principles that we want to do, that we are not just living off each other's work or efforts or having a commodity take on things, but that we really can be engaging with each other. And then you, of course, realize that for that kind of degrowth in the way that we do things, of course, there are other issues in structural issues in society. I still think for lack of a better solution, something like a basic income or something like a Kansallis Palkka, citizens' income. If you don't want to call it a basic income, but would be something that could be enabling so much. There is, if you look at our farms, there could be so much good work available for many more people. If only people could, for people that want to shift away from what they're doing. Many of us have the blessing of being engaged in meaningful work, but perhaps for others, they would want to be doing something else if they had the choice. And that choice is very difficult at the moment. And so if there would be a guaranteed income for people with which they really could be safe, there could be a lot of transitioning towards other initiatives, sustainable initiatives that bring more health, both for people and for our ecology. And there would be all kind of interesting experiences to look at. Like I mentioned the time bank, and we had some cooperation with a economist in Barcelona, Suzanne Belmont, and she, because well, we also have in our time bank the notion of a time tax. And, well, our discussions led to the fact that imagine the following. Imagine that you could be opting to be receiving a basic income in euros. Imagine that when you opt to receive that basic income, you agree that you are having a kind of debt, a death in an amount of work that you would be doing. Imagine that there would be in parallel to that a kind of a citizens process in which we would be charting down what are all the projects in our society that are not able to get on their feet at the moment, that they're not able to be sustainable because they don't have the resources to engage people in them. For instance, our food cooperative, or perhaps other cooperatives, other citizen initiatives, then you, as someone who receives the basic income, you could say that, hey, I'm interested in joining this project because I know how to do this and this and that, and I want to learn about this and this and that. I would want to go there and do my hours there. So we're not talking about free labor. We're talking about you going somewhere to be engaged with something that interests you. When you would be working in that initiative, you would be earning, let's say, for instance, something like a time credit, an alternative currency. With that alternative currency, you would pay off basically the fact that you got your basic income in euros, and at the same time, any more complementary currency earned, you could be using that in a network of what I call solidarity economy actors. So meaning you're a local product store, a local restaurant. So what you get at that time, at that moment, I hope that I explained it in a way that it was understandable. What you get at that moment is that you're having a basic income, which is kicking into life a currency for other economy building. You get your basic income. The initiatives are getting people engaged with them that can strengthen those initiatives. A complementary currency is earned, which is used in a network of other economy actors. Those things are very difficult to test. Those things are very difficult to experiment if there isn't a political will to make that happen out. All kind of envisioning could be possible to tie different dots together, which could be enabling people to be shifting away from what they are doing towards initiatives that are that they really want to be engaged with.
Yeah. Thank you. That's really interesting again. But now it's Emilia's turn to take the lead and ask some questions.
Yes, so now we'll move on to questions related to personal aspects and then some future plans. You may have partially answered some questions already, but how does OMAMA integrate the principles of degrowth into its practices and initiatives? And what lessons have you learned from implementing these principles?
I think indeed I already talked quite a lot about addressing in a way the... We are so poised also in Finland on the whole issue of innovation, preferably technical in the innovation. I think OMAMA is at the same time also like making us stand still by what is seen as the obvious, but what is actually very, very crucial. It's making people stand still at, first of all, land. And what land really means to us. You can talk about wanting to make food out of proteins, out of air, and you can pump a lot of funding into that. But it doesn't take away the fact that we need our soil and we need healthy soil. And agriculture can be a tool to come towards healthy soil. And our stomachs are directly related to the health of our soil. And we can put in as much technical innovation as we want, but that just doesn't take away the importance of our land. So it's the issue of food production also. For instance, we use a lot of traditional methodologies in how you produce food. So is it from the fermenting or is it about the sweetening or without sugar but through enzyme processes? A lot of things that we used to do, and it's not because of some sort of romantic nostalgia, but it's because of coming out of efficient resource use. But at the same time, also combining that with global tastes. But so, yeah, to put on the table that it's a bit of a coming back or reassessing where we have been also coming from and wanting to take elements from there that are still very, very useful for us. At the meetings where I was in Budapest last week, there was somebody who... perhaps one phase more senior in life, and she was. We were listening to different initiatives that people were telling about, and there were also quite some young people around who were very nicely telling about how they were occupying different spaces and going to the land, going to forests, and all the things that they were doing. And this lady, she said that she wanted to thank the youth now for what they were doing, because they were really trying to make undone with an entire generation now has been doing in the last decades, when there was this view of that developments meant so much, this increased commodification of everything, this increased efficiency, this increased speed of now that's not to say that not good things have come out of that. We also know that a lot of good things have come out of that, but also something has been lost and destroyed. And it's definitely also an issue of coming back and coming in terms with that. It doesn't mean, like people will sometimes say to me, that Ruby, you cannot expect that everybody, that they kaikki menen nyt takaisin pellolle. That it's not like that now, everybody's going to go back to. And some of us are perhaps even in your youth, you have to be, but some of us have had to be picking potatoes, and there might be partly still kind of upset that their holidays went to those kind of things. There is a looking in the eye of those things, and that's part definitely of the degrowth story there. It's at the same time, it's a growing of that what is good. So I think degrowth is a very fine word, but at the same time, I also feel that we have the opportunity to be growing so many very good things.
Yeah, exactly. As we only have 10 minutes left, I will move to the question related to future plans. So looking ahead, what do you see as the biggest opportunities and challenges for Omama in its ongoing efforts to promote degrowth and foster sustainable communities?
I think the opportunity lies in the fact that there is becoming more and more awareness, and there is an opportunity there. At the same time, of course, there are these huge challenges of creating more understanding and creating more spaces for people to really talk to each other, so that we can collectively really connect the right dots together. We, of course, also see in our society and on the European level, we see also very, very many worrying developments in which there is not enough possibility for people to really talk together, to understand about why different things are happening in society, and that which is then not producing good political outcome or good policy outcome. So whilst at the same time there is this more awareness, there's at the same time there are also really big challenges that we are facing at the moment. See it as a bit of a case that that there's only one way of the keep on and working with these things. Perhaps also just have to face the fact that the need is only going to become bigger. That need is going to be pressing on all kind of fronts. Some of the needs we are not at all yet really talking about, or perhaps not even daring to look in the eye, as of all kind of developments that are happening. Is it with regard to climate and the developments which are happening worldwide, and what kind of moves of people that is going to be bringing on its feet, and already how much of course suffering there is already happening, and in how is that ball going to come closer to us and be more of an eye opener is of course an issue that you cannot delight in, but perhaps it is so that the need is going to be coming closer, and therefore coming more strengthening from people. Sometimes this you can make the scenario, if you think that how can we be getting more power for our initiatives, is it by a direct overthrowing of the other power, or are we actually building a parallel society to what is going on? And then you could say that at the moment you're trying so much to get people with in that parallel society to build up things differently. And as the need now is on a voluntary basis for people to choose, but perhaps the need is going to be growing, that more and more people are going to have to be joining in that parallel society, because there is no room nor space to get your basic needs fulfilled in the main system, so to speak. So those are the processes that we have to work with.
Yes, so now I think we have reached the end of our interview. Your efforts are truly inspiring, and we appreciate that you took the time to share your story. And yeah, we wish you all the best in the future, and hopefully your work can also inspire others to join the journey towards a more sustainable world. So yeah, thank you very much for this interview.
Thank you, and a welcome to everybody to come out to the farm. Do feel yourself welcome. Spring is coming and summer is coming, so come to find us in Tuusula.